Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Would you submit to one of these pat downs?
Not if I could avoid it. No, I mean, who would?
Love is strange. Lot of people.
As you well know, under the director of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, love is very strange indeed. In fact, they're now stripping little boys at airports and reducing them to tears. We have an overly intrusive government that's gotten out of control. The people are revolting. This is only the beginning. And we're going to talk about what this really means. In other words, where do you think they're really going with this? What's interesting to me is that this has little to do with terrorism in one regard. It has everything to do with intimidating the population in another regard. Now, the reason I say that is that the left wing in this country actually does not exercise any kind of scrutiny on the kind of people actually suspected of terrorism before they commit terrorist acts. That's number one. In fact, Janet Napolitano objects to any attempt to even listen in on cell phone calls initiated by suspected terrorists. Janet Napolitano and the Obama administration will not even capture and subject would-be terrorists to aggressive questioning prior to them committing the act of terror. So what this is, the TSA pat-downs, is a much more nefarious thing. What it is, it's a strategy to get you used to being searched without due cause. It's a violation of the Constitution. It's an attempt to get you to see yourself as a criminal, as a person who deserves to be searched in this unnecessary and perverted manner. And by the way, under Obama, it will not stop at airports. This is another attempt to drive a nail in the coffin of American freedom as the radical left-wing Obama administration continues its march to take over the United States of America. The more you acquiesce to this type of illegal and unconstitutional searching, the closer the Obama administration is to giving up or taking away your rights in plain English. That's how most Americans see this. Make no mistake about it, we have a naked Marxist as president, surrounded by unappointed, what do they call them, czars or whatever. They're still the hidden communists inside the government, nakedly, overtly contemptuous of our freedoms. And you have to be very creative in fighting them. You can't fight them straight up because you're going to be arrested. So what you have to do is fight them in a way they don't expect. Now, I recognize that some of you like love taps by the TSA because you don't get enough loving in your own life. And I realize that you have to submit to this if you want to fly. But there are ways to fight back against an oppressive regime that may be legal and yet a little unorthodox. For example, if one of these deviants who gets on his hands and knees and sticks his hands up into your behind, what if he touched an old man who got nervous who released bowel gas in his face? I realize this may be a little burlesque for most of you and it's not considered sophisticated. But nevertheless, it's an interesting thought. Would that old man be arrested for assault by bowel gas? Now, let's go through this question again. What if they make a person nervous, as one of the deviants gets on his hands and knees with rubber gloves and gives you a frisk in the derriere, and an old person lets go with a little bowel gas in the face of the TSA agent? Could that person be arrested? It's an interesting question because I don't know the answer to it. But I'd like to ask you what would happen if 10 million people on the same day had the same accident. Would the TSA then develop a new method of screening passengers? Or they risk assault by bowel gas? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to talk about this burlesque question, you can call me on that number. Or if you care to talk about anything else we're talking about in the Savage Nation, such as Love is Strange, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I'm not sure you want to talk about bowel gas on the Savage Nation, but I'm going to talk about it until eventually America gets the picture. We're dealing with a group of individuals who are sort of working around the Constitution to try to work us over, warm us up. You know that Congress doesn't have to go through these tests. Most don't. Most fly on their own jets. You know that Hillary doesn't have to go through it. She's on Air Force Three. And the fact of the matter is you do. Now, if you take a look at what they've done to the little boy at the airport, stripping him down to his shirt, you know there was a deviant involved. You know that. We found an article about Obama written in 1990 on WorldNet Daily that was released by the Associated Press. And the headline was, Harvard Student Tackles Racism at Core. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this article, and I'm going to read sparingly from it, is you're going to get a fast picture of who the radical is inside the White House. If you haven't read Trickle Up Poverty, you can get a much more detailed analysis of who is inside the White House. But if you read this article from 1990 about this radical college student named Obama and his obsession with racism, even though he was admitted to Harvard with a sketchy degree in political science from Columbia, even though he was obviously a beneficiary of affirmative action, he claimed that there was racism in America. He claimed that once he got to Harvard, he said, there's certainly racism here. There are certain burdens that are placed, more emotionally at this point than concretely, Obama said. Professors may treat black students differently, sometimes by being sort of more dismissive, sometimes by being more sort of careful, because they think you know, they think that somehow we can't cope in the classroom. Now, I want to pause for a moment. A giveaway of a sophomoric individual, whether they be on MSNBC or in the White House, is the phrase sort of. Whenever you're listening to cable television and you see a kind of 10th-rate would-be intellectual trying to act sophisticated, projecting false aplomb, the mark of the sophomoric individual is the phrase sort of. You'll notice they use that continuously, the college kids, the president, the folks on MSNBC, the guests they have on that kind of program. Sort of is the giveaway. So the president grew up in the sort of type of environment, like kind of, sort of, kind of Harvard-like, where he found that there was sort of racism, even though it wasn't there. He knew it was there. Even though they admitted him, even though he has had no background other than in political science, they sort of admitted him, kind of, sort of. He kind of, sort of thought there was racism anyway. Obama went on to say he sees the inner cities as the front lines of racism, and he gives a whole speech about how he's going to help the poor and how he's interested in organizations, not movements, because movements dissipate and organizations don't, whatever that means. That's a code word for something or other that only those who say sort of in every other sentence would understand. But now here's the bottom line. 1990, here's your president. Hopefully, he said, more and more people will begin to feel their story is somehow part of this larger story of how we're going to reshape America in a way that is less mean-spirited and more generous. I mean, I really hope to be part of a transformation of this country and the future of black people and of America generally. It depends on how good I do my job, said Obama in 1990. So he was concerned about the mean-spiritedness of America and how he wanted to be transformational. And now they're strip-searching three-year-olds and breaking them to tears. And that's why I say it is relevant, very relevant, to talk about bowel gas in a TSA agent's face on a mass scale. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So as we know, this is a government trying to intimidate the population first by criminalizing you and making you feel that you should subject yourself to any kind of humiliation, that no humiliation is too low to go. And so as I say, how far will it go until the American people start to react? And you have to react creatively. And so I'm asking what you think of a gassin. And that is a gassin in terms of, since they like to get on their hands and knees and run their hands up our tingly legs. I mean, I suppose if it was Chris Matthews, he'd get a tingly leg from it. Then there are the deviants in the legal profession, such as one that you can see says she likes being felt up, a degenerate psycho from the lowest level. You've got very sick people out there who enjoy this, but most of us are not sick. So we have to fight back any way we can, and I'm asking what's going to happen if people accidentally get nervous and release bowel gas in the face of these TSA deviants. And what if it happens a million times a day? What is going to happen? And the question is, where does this end and where does it go? Sacramento Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I love your idea about revolting against the pat-downs, and I'm thinking about the revolt of the whoopee cushions. Why don't we just carry those babies under our armpits and we go through and just start making noises?
Well, I wouldn't suggest that because they'll probably seize your whoopee cushion, and then what would you do at night for love?
So
thank you. Thank you for the call. I mean, they take away your whoopee cushion, there's nothing left. By the way, I know this is very, very gauche to most refined individuals who don't find this very palatable or appetizing in any way. But these are unusual times with a very low grade of president and a very low grade of Congress and a very low grade of Homeland Security, a very low grade at every level, mean-spirited of the highest order, and mentally of the lowest order, with no respect whatsoever for the U.S. Constitution or human dignity or human rights. And so I think that we have to be creative, and that's why I'm suggesting that you think about this. I'm not suggesting you do this. By no means would I suggest that you release bowel gas in the face of a TSA operative, because after all, they're humans too, and they just have a job to do. They're only following orders. I'm sure most of them would rather not pat down your child. I'm sure most of them would rather not strip search your grandmother in a wheelchair and reduce her to tears. I'm sure most of them would rather not strip a nun to her undergarments in public. They're only following orders, you see. And since they're only following orders, I mean, you have to have compassion for them. There have been many other nations where they said they were only following orders. They didn't mean to reduce anyone to tears or strip them of their humanity. And then eventually, you know, put them into a certain type of facility and then they're only following orders when they made them work for the government. And then they were only following orders when they removed the gold from their teeth. And they were only following orders when they gassed them and only following orders, etc. And so on. You say, come on, you're getting carried away. Take it any way you want. That's all. This is a nation of sheeple, a term I developed 15 years ago. And it's increasingly apparent to me that we now have a despot in the White House who, frankly, is surrounded by Obama bots, who will do anything the man says without understanding that they are their enemy, that they are the enemy they feared all their lives. So the question is, where do we go from here? Anna in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, well, they already have had urine in their hands. Remember the gentleman that had the cancer and had the urine pack?
Yeah,
I wanted to say with all of my heart, I do believe that the underwear bomber was a plant. Now, in retrospect, I thought it was the hand of God and some kind of mistake. But when you really put the pieces together, his father warned our government. He was ignored. No passport, no luggage, no return ticket. He's from Yemen, which makes him already a person.
No, he was from Nigeria, I believe. He was a Nigerian, and he was from a wealthy family, by the way.
Yeah. And then you
But the individual, I don't know about whether they... I don't know whether there was a conspiracy in order to introduce this underwear search, truthfully. I mean, we can't just jump to that conclusion. I think it's strict incompetence and overreacting, frankly.
About the scanner? The scanner, there's money...
Well, the scanner's all about money. The scanner is all about money. That's Michael Chertoff, the former Homeland Security Director under Bush, recommended these scanners while he was in Homeland Security. And then when he left, he went to work in some capacity for them. You understand? It also came out today that one of the individuals on Obama's trip to India was the scanner man. The man is the CEO of the scanner company. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
You didn't? Oh, yeah. Every day we're getting more information. It goes way beyond love taps. Follow the money. It's always about money. It's always about money. I'm here in Los Angeles. I've traveled against my will. Fortunately, I didn't have to subject myself to a urine analysis, nor did I have to revert to this burlesque that I'm discussing. But if you want to talk about the burlesque, I mean, I'm knowledgeable about it. I happen to know which foods produce the most, it's just common sense. I mean, the foods that contain the highest amount of sulfur, do you have to finish the sentence, produce the most amount of sulfurous gases? And so, therefore, I would recommend you don't eat a lot of onions prior to boarding a plane. I definitely recommend you do not eat garlic before being felt up by a TSA agent. I suggest you do not eat eggs of any age prior to being frisked by a deviant at TSA. But most importantly, of all the foods I have mentioned, I'd recommend you do not eat onions prior to being frisked by one of the upstanding individuals in the TSA, because the onions are perhaps the most offensive of the foods. Now, I eat a lot of these foods, which is not why I don't fly. I eat them because they're very healthful, because the more sulfur that you take into your body, the less you are afflicted by various microbes. I don't know if you know this. It's a very interesting discussion, actually. You can go from the burlesque to the scientific in one breath if you're me. Sulfur is a very powerful antibacterial agent. It's actually a very powerful antimicrobial, not just antibacterial. And so I tend to eat a lot of garlic and a lot of onions. I'm sort of very old world about it. And so, therefore, I'd be a terrible candidate for a TSA a frisking. Let's leave it at that. I don't have to finish the sentence. And so, therefore, I choose not to fly in that manner anymore, because I certainly don't want to inflict any of this upon a poor TSA agent who's only following orders. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. How about when you started walking around airports with your shoes off? How about when they first made you take off your shoes and you thought that was a burden? And you wanted to say something, but you went along with the program. Now they got little boys broken in tears at the airport. Now they have a man with a bladder cancer survivor covered with his own urine and crying, and they didn't even say, "I'm sorry." Now you find out today that the body scanner manufacturer spent millions on lobbying the vermin in the government. Now you find out that the CEO of the scanner company was with Obama on his trip to India. Now you find out that it's all about money. Now you find out it has little to do with security.
Savage.
Well, I never felt more like singing the blues, because I never thought that I'd ever lose your love. Why'd you do me?
It is the Savage Nation. Strange times produce strange radio shows. We're talking about bowel gas, of all things, and whether you could be arrested for assault by bowel gas if you accidentally had an accident while you're being frisked by a TSA agent on the Savage Nation. I have a bunch of old rock and roll here, such as The Happy Organ by Dave Baby Cortez. I think that might fit in. The Happy Organ, I think they're talking about the musical instrument, not about the people at the TSA. They might have happy organs of some kind when they get home and they're playing on the organ. Oh, this stinks. No, okay, play it. Yeah, play it. You know, there's a story I found. It's a big story on my website. Global warming has hit in Northern California. I don't know if you know this. There's definitive proof that Al Gore is not a criminal liar. There's proof that the UN is not filled with filthy, degenerate liars in the global warming field. There is definitive proof that everyone who has doubted global warming should be arrested immediately and put into a mental hospital. And the proof is that we had 10 feet of snow in Northern California over the weekend. 10 feet of snow, not 10 inches, 125 inches over the weekend. Now, I recognize that this is caused by global warming. You see, the way the gangsters work it is that if we had a very hot winter with no snow, they'd say, "See, we were right." Now that we have 10 feet of snow over the weekend, they say that's as a result of global warming, and then they give you the reasons, so-called, that they have invented. But the skiers like it, and of course you're not going to read about it, because every winter that there's a heavy snow, Al Gore goes underground. He's not seen. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What would you like to talk about, ethanol or bowel gas? Al Gore's convenient untruth about views on ethanol. When you think about it, I mean, ethanol is an interesting discussion, which I'm not going to have. I'd rather talk about ethyl alcohol rather than ethanol. And if we don't want to talk about ethyl alcohol, then we could talk about swamp gas, because we have a nation that is virtually swimming in swamp gas now as a result of the swamp in the White House. I realize that many of you find this offensive. I realize that sometimes the truth hurts, and I realize that many of you don't want to hear this. Many of you would like to see me put into a prison camp of the type that they have in North Korea. Many of you would like to believe that North Korea doesn't have a prison camp. Many of you don't want to even go to michaelsavage.com and see the linkage from the Washington Post, which some genius already took down off my website. That perhaps the most important story was already removed from the website by the geniuses who run my website. Perhaps they can go and find it again. But there were actual maps of the prison camps where people are worked to death and starved to death and killed in North Korea on michaelsavage.com. There was until minutes ago, until the little gremlins took the story down. But I realize that many of the verminous liberals in America would like to see such re-education camps in America. Let's go to New York. Julie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Savage, thank you. I was a little I'm starting to get a little concerned about the American public, that they were off quiet when these regulations first came out. I have a disabled daughter who in no way could understand how to stand and be scanned, and it would frighten her to death. And all we hear about is that if you're exposed to x-rays, then it increases your chance of cancer. And God knows she would not be able to be pat down. She would try to bite somebody if they were touching her in bad places.
Well, they should no doubt arrest her in order to protect a TSA agent. I mean, there's no question the TSA agent has certain rights and responsibilities, and that child being handicapped or disabled in any way shouldn't excuse that child. She could be a terrorist from the point of view of Obama, don't you think?
It just has not been he's terrible. Everything he's doing is meant
no, he's not terrible. I mean, he's flown around the world on Air Force One in order to do better for you and your child. That's why he went to India with an entourage of 2,000 businessmen, including the man who's in charge of the scanning companies. He did it for you. He did it for the little people. Because he fears that racism is rampant in America, that it's a mean-spirited country. Would you like a present for Thanksgiving? I'll send you Trickle-Up Poverty, okay?
Thank my headline you very is, much.
You're, no, guys, take down the ladies. Stuff yourself with the truth. I may not even eat turkey this Thanksgiving out of a kind of a revolt. What time is it? I have no idea where I am. I'm so disoriented right now. I have no idea why I'm in Los Angeles. You know, I saw a story that got me sick. It was a kid fell off at the Staples Center. Here it is. Child dies after 50-foot fall at Lakers game. How does this happen in this world? A kid is at a basketball game in Los Angeles watching the Lakers. I haven't been in a basketball game since Jamaica High School. I used to like the sound of the sneakers on the floor, and I would cheer for the team that wore the colors that were like my high school, but I had no idea what they were doing. It was generally the kids who couldn't pass any courses. They gave them a basketball, and they told them they'd get into the best colleges if they continued doing whatever. And I liked it because when you're a kid, you don't know any better. My preference was the rifle team. We'd go in the basement, and we would shoot the Mossberg 22s. I liked the smell of gunpowder in the afternoon and the target rifles. And nobody ever, ever shot themselves. Nobody ran through the halls and shot anybody else. How is it that all of a sudden all of this madness is breaking out in America for the last 10 years? There's a lot of reasons. Child dies after 50-foot fall at Lakers game. I'm supposed to go to a basketball game tomorrow night here in Los Angeles. It's so spooky, it's unbelievable. Child dies after 50-foot fall at Lakers game. How could this happen? What could it do to the parents? The parents' hearts are broken, right? Take a guess what the government is doing to the parents. Child Abuse Unit investigating boy's death in Staples Center fall. Now, I want you to understand something. The luxury suites are reserved for very wealthy people, not for people who would abuse a child in this manner in any way. Instead, the degenerate state is going to investigate the parents who just lost a child. A two-year-old boy falls out of a luxury suite after Sunday night's Lakers game, and right away the degenerates in the child abuse unit are investigating the parents. No sympathy, no compassion. Instead, they're questioning the parents of what they did. What did you do? Were you watching them? What were you doing when the child was in danger? How come you weren't watching them? Maybe you should be arrested. A child falls out of a booth, it's an accident, and these degenerate vermin in a child abuse unit come and investigate the parents? This is the kind of country we're living in. This is unbelievable to me. If you have not been a parent, you don't even understand what happened here. How can you blame the parents for everything that happens to a child? One of my relatives just got a new puppy. And this individual knows, you know, very little about raising children. He cannot believe what a puppy can do to itself. It could eat a, it could lick a broom that was just dipped in a lye solution. It could walk into a moving wheel. Unless you've raised a baby, you don't understand the danger a baby is in. A baby is a creature without any knowledge of anything. Liberals who don't have children, all have nieces and nephews, are the experts in child rearing. You ever say to a liberal, you don't know what the hell you're talking about with regard to children? They say, well, I have nieces. I know a lot about children. I'm better than you. Even though I don't raise them, I know more about them because I have a niece and I have a nephew. Children are basically, and an infant can die in a quarter of an inch of water in a bathtub. An infant can drink Drano. An infant can poke his eye out with a pencil. Anything could happen to an infant if you've ever raised one, unless you understand it, unless you're one of those singles who works for MSNBC who has a niece. You have to understand a child needs total protection all the time. That's a given. Okay, so you take a kid to a basketball game, and you turn your head for 1 minute, and he falls out of the stand and dies. Well, okay. Does that mean that you should go now and break the parent's heart even further? Kill them altogether and say that you're responsible? I don't know. It's unbelievable to me. So the railings are low in the suites, right? And perhaps a little child shouldn't have been in the suite. So maybe that's the story. Maybe there's your answer. Maybe they should get a shyster lawyer. But if you lost the child 2 years old, should you now be investigated by the child abuse unit? All the experts now. Why don't you ban basketball games? Why don't you ban basketball games? Why don't you close down the Staples Center? No, better yet, why don't you put TSA agents in the basketball arena to investigate basketballs in case that somebody put TNT inside a basketball? 1-800-449-8255. Are any of you interested in any of this assault by bowel gas? Or is everybody already on turkey and trimmings? I think I'm not even going to eat turkey this year. It's enough for, I eat it all year long once in a while. I don't even like it. I eat it out of default. It's like a default food. Turkey's a dirty animal, number one. Ask anyone who raises them. They're filthy, dirty creatures. But I don't want to go into the actual chemical constituents of turkey. It's a tradition. Okay, so you're supposed to have it. Fine. I've always enjoyed it, but this year I become more like Scrooge in my own mind. I don't want turkey. I don't even want to eat it anymore. Because I think when I go to the basketball game Tuesday night at the Staples Center, they're actually having a cooked turkey. At the event or in the restaurant afterwards or before, like a pre-Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, it's a crazy world. It's just unbelievable. Lose a child 2 years of age, falls out of a stand, and in addition to losing the child now, the degenerates in the LAPD come and investigate for the child abuse unit. Do you ever take a look at the people in the child abuse unit? They look like they should be working for the TSA. New York, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Poor Obama, no matter what he does, he can't win. If instead of these new X-ray lasers being put in, a plane was blown up by a terrorist on the plane, you people would be saying, oh, that Obama, he didn't search people good enough. He should have taken...
I say he should, sir. He should start by searching Hillary Clinton. He should start by searching all members of Congress who fly. I think that that would be a good place to start, don't you?
Hillary Clinton is not going to blow up a plane. And
well, how do you know? How do you know? Would a nun blow up a plane?
If you're so dumb that you...
Well, wait a minute. You just said something very interesting. You're a very brilliant man. You said that you know Hillary Clinton wouldn't blow up a plane. I agree with you. Oh. Would you not agree there are other members of society who you can pretty much be sure won't blow up a plane?
Yeah, I'm pretty much sure that I won't blow up a plane. But
Hold on. Well, there you go. Now we got two Americans who won't blow up a plane. You won't. Hillary Clinton won't. How about the man who called who said that his son just graduated from Marine boot camp with 20 other young men who are willing to give their lives for the country? Shouldn't they be given a separate entrance to an airplane as they come out of boot camp, like the whole group be allowed on the plane without having their crotches grabbed by these perverts?
Well, what does this have to do with civilian airline people?
Well, because they're flying on a civilian airliner out of the boot camp. the boot camps in, you know, wherever it is, North Carolina, wherever the boot camp is, and they're flying home as a group. Why should they be frisked by your friends in the TSA?
These people were not out of a boot camp. What the hell are you talking about?
Look, sir, I know you're senile, and you lost your wife a long time ago because she couldn't take your insanity. But you're on a national radio show right now. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Why is it that the same left-wingers that you support are so sensitive to the needs of terrorists and are not sensitive to the needs of American people? How do you explain that?
How do you explain the fact that you said that France had fallen to the Muslims, that it was completely under control of the Muslims?
When did I say France had fallen to the Muslims? I never said that.
Stupid.
I said that everyone who knows anything knows that London is now called Londonistan. Londonistan.
Heard it called Londonistan. Maybe
well,
you
of course not. You don't even read the internet. How can you know what anything's called? You're still reading the Journal American from 1942 that you found in your bathroom.
What the hell are you talking about?
Get off my show. Take a walk. Don't even listen to this show. You lower the IQ of my listeners. Never listen to this show, sir. Only listen to NPR where they talk your kind of language. That's all. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. New York, Ronan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Mike? I just want to tell you you're hilarious, and I'm a very big fan of yours. This is my question to you is, I can't believe it got to this whole thing with TSA patting passengers down and stuff. I mean, how did it get to this? Why can't the Americans do the same psychological screening just like we do here in Israel? Like, I don't understand. Look at our track record. I mean,
The answer is quite simple. You say that screeners at Ben Gurion Airport in Israel and elsewhere, run by El Al, use psychological screening, right?
Right.
But when you consider the low level of TSA agents, do you think they're capable of psychological screening?
You know what? It's really not that hard. I mean, if you get a good training, look.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, anyone who works for Janet Napolitano, do you think they're capable of psychological screening of individuals?
We do things. And you know what? Well, like, what do they call
again, I'm saying one thing he's saying. Wait, I got to have a hydration break. I need to breathe into a paper bag from today. Wait. I don't know if you're able to hear me.
Yeah, I hear you.
In order to do psychological screening, don't the people have to have a modicum of intelligence?
I mean, yeah, they do, but listen, you know...
Let me ask, does Israel use ex-military for the screening?
Well, you know what it is? Everyone serves the military in Israel.
All right. So they have a reasonable intelligence. They know what a terrorist actually is.
Right.
As opposed to this country, who assumes everyone's a terrorist, except people in full body garb.
Right.
Look, I got to tell you something. I went to Israel in 1979. My daughter was 2 years old, right? I wasn't very happy with them opening up her diaper, to be very, very honest with you.
Yeah, well,
my 2-year-old infant didn't pass the psychological profile?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I mean, you're saying Why would they open up the daughter's diaper at Ben Gurion?
Well, that's a little too much. I mean, you have, I wouldn't, they shouldn't be doing that, but...
Well, they did it. They did it 20 years ago. So, I mean, everyone holds up Israel like it's some, Israel, schmizreel. Like, they have all the answers. They don't have the answers. They use ecstasy in Israel to a higher proportion than any other Western nation, so far as I know.
Yeah.
Smuggled in by people with fake religious affiliations. How did I say all of that in one sentence? How does a man say a thing like that? How dare he say that? That the use of ecstasy in Israel is at a higher proportion than most Western nations. How dare he notice a thing like that? How could a man on radio know a thing like that or even suggest a thing like that? After all, Israel's a sacred nation. It's the sacred cow of the Western conservative. But don't get me started with sacred cows because I don't like them. I don't like any sacred cow from either side, left or right. Oh, I got to take a break. That's a sacred cow. It is the Savage Nation, and here is In the Still of the Night by the Five Statins, the official song of the AMA. They used to be known as the Five Satins. But since the AMA took over the song, they've renamed it the Five Statins. Could you play the song, please? You don't have to end it right away. The last time I went to a basketball game is when I listened to this. 1957. Running, sneakers, squeaking, balls, hot dog. I like a controlled environment. I don't like everything. $11,000 fine and arrest possible for someone who refuses airport scans and pat-downs. $11,000, wow. "We will handle each incident on a case-by-case basis," said the TSA spokesman, Sally Kushitz. "We will handle each incident on a case-by-case basis. This way to the showers. Your free trip. You will be given a nice clean bus. Your belongings will be returned to you. No one will be forcibly searched or arrested. We will decide on a case-by-case basis. If a person is judged to be a possible threat..." Meanwhile, the ACLU is silent. The reason the ACLU is silent is because they're complicit in the humiliation of the American people and the breakdown of the American will to resist an overly intrusive Obama administration. Many of you don't understand who Obama is. You think he's just a nice man who has your best interests at heart. What you really don't know is that he's a lifetime Marxist. I call him a pan-Leninist and trickle-up poverty, but most of you know about as much about Pan as you do about Lenin. You suppose you hear the word pan, you think of a man with a flute. Or maybe when you say pan, you think of a frying pan. But the word pan-Leninist actually has a different meaning. I wouldn't expect anyone who's a liberal on the left side of the spectrum to understand what pan-Leninism means. But how come it is that suddenly the left wing reverses course and tries to prevent terrorist attacks when they won't even go after suspected terrorists, and when they do catch them, they bend over backwards to make sure they get civilian trials and they're released, as happened last week. Love Taps a Strange by the TSA. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Monday edition of the Savage Nation. Things are not so fine under Obama the Marxist or pan-Leninist, whatever. Can you play it louder? Every time I say a word, you turn the music down. Now stop the music and I'll talk. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We're talking about Love Taps by the TSA. We're talking about a gassing at TSA counters around America. We are talking about whether or not you might be arrested for assault by bowel gas if you were to engage in such an act. We are talking about the fact that Al Corleone is definitively the biggest liar in the history of the Western world, that we had 10 feet of snow over the weekend in Northern California. Now, you wouldn't know that because your local newspapers wouldn't report that, because if you saw that here we have Thanksgiving coming up and there was 10 feet, not 10 inches, 125 inches now. I know that even a liberal knows that there's 12 inches to a foot and that they know that that's over 10 feet of snow. Biggest November snowstorm in years. 10 feet of snow at Kirkwood has resorts scrambling to open before Thanksgiving. North Star Tahoe, 55 inches. Squaw, 50 inches. Well, you said 10 feet. Now that's 50 inches. That shows there's global warming, because there was truly no global warming. There would be 125 inches consistent everywhere. And while the government under Obama and Bill Gates, whatever his name is, the head of the Defense Department, was busy worrying about gays in the military, North Korea was developing the capacity to strike the West Coast with nuclear weapons. Now, this is an administration that has all of its priorities straight. The entire modus operandi of the Defense Department for the last several months has been to make certain that don't ask, don't tell is eliminated so that gays may openly serve in the military. Instead of worrying about defending America, they're worried about that problem. And while you're worried about global warming, nervously worrying about it, good old nature drops 10 feet of snow on Northern California. And they have to open the they have to open up a little early. But you don't want to read about that because it violates the protocols of the left wing. Biggest November snowstorm. It's actually in the last 6 years. We had a snowstorm like this 6 years ago. What you don't know is that California has a typical Mediterranean climate. We can't say that anymore because it makes sense. What used to be known as a Mediterranean climate got written out of the textbooks after the left-wing fanatics took over the country. But in fact, we actually have a classic Mediterranean climate in the West Coast. And as I've noticed living out here for some 30 years, I don't know how long it's been, 74, 84, 90, oh my God, I have to do the math, 84, 94. Holy God, 36 years already in La La Land. The fact of the matter is it's the biggest November series of storms in 6 years. We have about a six-year cycle. We have 6 years of drought, a drought cycle, and 6 years of a wet cycle. So now we're going into a wet cycle. But don't tell that to Al Corleone because that would upset the billion contracts that he and his friends have, ranging from here to Moscow on global warming. Many ski resorts are scuttling scheduled opening dates in the wake of November's big white dump, the biggest November series of snowstorms in 6 years. Again, 10 feet. 10 feet at Kirkwood, 125 inches. Kirkwood has a high back wall near Carson Pass on the Sierra Crest. And 3 days now it has 125 inches of snow. That's 10 feet. More coming tonight. More coming tomorrow. So those of you who want a white Christmas, you have it. But don't tell it to Al Corleone because he's nowhere to be found. The reason he's nowhere to be found is because it violates his entire scam. Squaw Valley, USA reported 50 inches for the three-day snow event. Opened 5 of 33 lifts, 15 of 177 trails. Boreal, right off of Highway 80, reported 18 inches Sunday. I know you don't live out, it doesn't matter to you, but we're talking about the lies that are being told by various and sundry individuals in and out of the media. Now, I realize that if you are an expert in climate, this also can be explained by global warming, that if your mind is sufficiently twisted by the lies coming out of East Anglia University, there's no doubt an explanation as to why global warming would produce 10 feet of snow before Thanksgiving. Total insanity. And the same people who believe that global warming is responsible for 10 feet of snow are the same people who believe that Janet Napolitano can actually make you safer by strip searching your infant at an airport. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Tons of spin-outs, head-ons, slams into berms, jackknife trucks, and accidents jamming up the road. Be safe. Enjoy the mountains. Pack your car with survival essentials. Make sure that you carry a whistle in case the car goes off the road. And definitely have a phone that can call your lawyer. If you should actually skid out and skid off the road, you can sue somebody, I'm sure. You could probably sue God. Where's the global warming now? 10 feet of snow. So it's a cycle, that's all. It runs like this. I myself don't ski. I was an inner-city youth. I didn't learn to ski. Sled, yes. Toboggan, yes. Because there's Russian ancestry. I learned to take a toboggan down Mount Royal. It was the Chateau Frontenac toboggan in Montreal with a half pint of brandy. In fact, with a half pint of brandy, I could probably jump out of an airplane without a parachute. But I haven't tried that yet, nor do I intend to try it. But a half a bottle of Courvoisier and a toboggan worked very well. In fact, it worked so well that I enjoyed myself going down the toboggan at Chateau Frontenac. I haven't been there in many, many a decade. But again, as I say, I love winter. As long as I don't have to be in it, it's lovely to look at. I've always enjoyed Currier and Ives prints. As long as I don't have to live in it, the idealized version of the American farmhouse to me is beautiful as long as it's idealized, because there is no such thing as an idealized anything. It's like an idealized husband or an idealized wife. It's like Playboy destroyed this Playboy destroyed man and woman in America because they made woman into something she could never be. They airbrushed the woman into a creature that doesn't exist. So consequently, many men have been searching for the airbrushed woman who doesn't exist, as you well know. And so now they're seeking women who look like post-op transvestites instead of like women. And as a result, nobody's getting married, or very few, and there's almost no children being born. And as a result, here we are on talk radio looking at love taps by the TSA. So if you'd like to talk about any of these subjects, from snow to snow jobs, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Do you think you'll be safe with these searches? Do you think that even if they stripped you down to your skin and submitted you to a body cavity search, the terrorists wouldn't find a way to bring contraband on board? And if that's the case, then what's the solution? I got to be a solution. Certainly you can start to give certain people a pass who you know won't blow up a plane. As one intelligent gentleman in the last hour said, why, Hillary Clinton shouldn't be frisked or subjected to body scans because we know she wouldn't blow up a plane. And I agree with them. She wouldn't blow up a plane. Al Gore wouldn't blow up a plane. The vice president wouldn't blow up a plane. But wouldn't you assume that there are certain American citizens that wouldn't blow up a plane either, such as U.S. Marines coming back from combat? Maybe they could be given kind of a special dispensation instead of being frisked by a minimum wage degenerate. Let's have some rock and roll as you think about this. How about Elvis Presley, Heartbreak Hotel? I always loved that song. I liked Heartbreak Hotel as a youngster. For some reason, Elvis appealed to me. He had a certain appeal, Elvis. Before he did the Needle City, he wasn't a bad singer. Doesn't turn it off. It's not funny. There's nothing there. Dead. How about Johnny Mathis, Chances Are? I'm playing old rock and roll today because it's holiday time already with snow. Chances Are by Johnny Mathis. Oh, Johnny Mathis, so sweet. Johnny Mathis was to rock and roll what Juan Williams is to a serious news. I got to entertain myself now. I can feel I'm knocking my head against a blank wall already. The rock and roll, like soft but friendly. Yeah, all right. Let's have another. Oh, Paul Anka now, Diana. This is a good song. Paul Anka, Diana. This has pulse. This has a beat to it. Even the old geezer who didn't like me in the last hour is probably tapping his foot to this one. Am I just living around? Wheeling around somewhere in Las Vegas, like false teeth and a wig. God, people get so ugly when they get old. It's horrible. Everyone lives forever. It was something to be said for young death. I mean, the truth is, I don't mean him, in general. In the old days, I mean, you got into warfare, you were dead by 29. Look what Alexander the Great did and then died in his 30s. He didn't have to go through this with dentists and root canal and hair. Watching his teeth fall out, his hair fall out. It's like a slow death as you go on and on. We live forever now. Everything falls off your body. It's like parts off an old Buick. It's like parts off a Buick Riviera now. Everything is falling off a person's body. And they don't give up in L.A. I was riding on Sunset Boulevard today, so some quack doctor had a big sign on one of the billboards. It says, "Stop aging now. Read Dr. Schmuck's book on stopping aging now." I would put out a book that wouldn't say, what do you mean stop aging? No one could stop aging. What do you want to stop it for anyway? What do you want to die with like false teeth and fall? What do you mean stop aging? There's no way to stop aging. I'm not saying speed it up. But what do you have to stop it for? Can't you grow old gracefully? They didn't forget about that. I don't know. When I grew up, people had dignity when they were older. Today, there's no dignity. With the invention of Viagra and Propecia, whatever it is for the hair, there's no such thing as dignity. A man thinks he's a young man, 17, 70, doesn't matter. Leaves the wife, marries a bimbo. The next, Mel Gibson, fighting, screaming, Loxana, Roxana, Doxana, beds, children, Doxana, Roxana, take the children, take my money, please. What do you think is going to happen if you're 60 and she's 25? She married you for your body, right? She couldn't find somebody with a harder body on Sunset Boulevard. She couldn't wait for you. I have an older friend, much older than I. Not married. He dates younger women, very young women, 50 years younger than him. He actually is reasonable compared to another guy I know who's 10 years older than him who says There's a guy I know who's 80, 90, who dates 25-year-olds, and people say, how do you do this? How could you do this? And the guy looks at him with a glint in his eye, and he says, my next girlfriend is an embryo. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, let's go to another issue to do with Muslims, because this whole TSA thing was started by Muslims who attacked us. If you don't remember, I guess many of you have forgotten. Maybe you thought it was grandmothers and men with urine bags who attacked us on 9/11. No, it was a group of Muslims, primarily from Saudi Arabia, who I would think should be given the double screening rather than the rest of us. But okay, what can I say? I'm just a old-fashioned kind of an American who looks at things in that manner. But again, we have a Muslim issue here. You remember the Ground Zero Mosque? Remember the Ground Zero Victory Mosque that the scam artist wants to build in Lower Manhattan, a few blocks away from the 9/11 disaster? Well, the developers of the Islamic Community Center and Mosque, located just blocks from Ground Zero, applied for a $5 million grant in federal grant money set aside for 9/11 victims. Actually, it was set aside for the redevelopment of Lower Manhattan after the attacks of 9/11. And so the wonderful, sensitive Muslims behind the Ground Zero Mosque are now trying to get money from this fund. The application was submitted under a community and cultural enhancement grant program administered by the Lower Manhattan Redevelopment Corporation, which oversaw the $20 billion in federal aid allocated in the wake of 9/11. And so the folks at the Ground Zero Mosque folks, being good Americans, and they know that America is a nation of sheeple, and they know the it's a nation where the street is paved with gold. The streets are paved with gold. Developer Sharif El Gamal has now applied for $5 million from that fund. And the question is, why shouldn't they have the money? After all, they're peace-loving people. We understand they only want to provide a community center for Lower Manhattan's 4,000 Muslim residents. We understand there aren't enough mosques in Manhattan already. And I think that they need the federal dollars. They are entitled to it. Because Imam Faisal is such a peace-loving man. Imam Faisal and his retinue of peace-loving Muslims don't want to stick a finger into the eye and heart of America. They want to get along with America. And I think the New Yorkers think that they should get the money from them. Because I've never met a New York liberal who didn't bend over backwards to understand Muslims. The only people they distrust would be returning combat veterans. Now there's people that need to be watched. A Marine, let's say, who lost an arm or a leg. There's a man that a New York liberal would distrust, but not a Muslim who wants to build a mosque two blocks away from Ground Zero. I mean, you've got to have your priorities straight. They need a mosque in down there. It's not enough. And the fact of the matter is, there's no reason they can't have it. We're not at war with Islam. We're not at war with Muslims. No, I think that we need more mosques. I mean, in fact, I think that more people should go to mosques in order to show that we're not racist. I think that the Department of Homeland Security should require that everyone go to a mosque on a regular basis and report what they've seen there in order to show that they're good Americans. And therefore, I think that there's no reason that Imam Faisal shouldn't get the money, to $5 million. I think we should all be forced to contribute to it. In fact, I think any American who wouldn't contribute to a Ground Zero mosque should be investigated by the Department of Homeland Security. Now, this is the same Department of Homeland Security that's frisking infants and people who are bladder cancer survivors, making them urinate on themselves. This is the same Department of Homeland Security under Big Sis Napolitano who refuses to stop the flood of illegal alien gangbangers coming across the border from Mexico, whether they're members of MS-13 or others. They are all sacred cows. And anyone in Arizona who stood up to the illegal alien hordes, anyone in Arizona or Texas who sees firsthand what the hordes are doing, anyone in Texas or Arizona who wants to defend their state, they're the real problem to Janet Napolitano. Not those who are coming across the border with AK-47s. Not those coming across the border with the contraband, whether it be drugs or humans. They're the real problem, are the citizens of America.
Savage.
Would you submit to one of these pat downs?
Not if I could avoid it. No, I mean, who would?
Not if I wouldn't either if I could avoid it. Of course, if you're flying in Air Force 3, it's a moot point. I mean, you have to admit, it's kind of a moot point for Hillary Clinton. That's why she can laugh about it. And so I think that the more the government officials get frisked and have their children humiliated and their grandmothers broken down into tears or covered with urine as they're putting back on their colostomy bags or whatever. 7-year-old girl says, Grandma, they touched you on your special girl spots. I mean, what am I going to say about that? There's nothing you could say about things like that. We know where this is going, and we know why they're doing it. On the face of it, yes. I'm the first one to say, what are you supposed to do? I mean, how are you going to frisk? How are you going to get to the bottom of all this? How are you going to stop this? How are you going to stop the Muslims who want to smuggle in bombs on an airplane and blow it? Oh, I don't mean Muslim, pardon me. Terrorists. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't use that either. Wait, let me think. Let me see if I can correct my thinking. I can't say terrorists who want to blow us up because there are no terrorists. According to Janet Napolitano, we don't have a war on terrorism and there are no terrorists. There are just disgruntled third worlders who come from impoverished backgrounds. Oops, can't say that either because actually the underwear bomber was a rich Nigerian who lived in London in a luxury. So let's see, what can we use? Individuals? Deranged individuals who are disturbed by society? Play clip 7. Let's see what we can use.
I'm comfortable with the decisions I made. And I took a lot of time to make the decisions. There are some things I'd like to do over. I mean, obviously,
what would you do over?
Well, I wouldn't be standing in front of a mission accomplished sign on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Probably would have been a little less blunt in some of my language.
Right, right. Okay.
But dead or alive, perhaps.
Yeah. Dead or alive. Okay. Yeah. All right, look.
That was the best thing he said, actually. It was the best thing he said, of course, since they've broken him to sell his book, telling him to be the kinder, gentler, and it applies to Americans who love America. Then you could use dead or alive, but not to terrorists. So as I say, I mean, how do you even refer to them? You can't say Muslims. You can't say terrorists because they don't exist. So it's very hard to even define our enemy if there are no enemies. There are no enemies, actually. They're a diverse group not unified by any possible elements whatsoever. Certainly not a religion. They're not unified by Islam because that's a religion of peace. So Islam has nothing to do with it. And they're not of any particular race or religion. It's generic individuals who want to harm us. Deranged people who are disgruntled. Sort of like George Metesky, the mad bomber. Like thousands of George Meteskys, the mad bombers running around the planet. Not unified by a religion, not unified by any belief system. Now, it is true that Major Nissan, whatever his name was, who killed 12 or 13, and I forget how many, it's not important because the Army has swept it under the rug, erasing the cell phone video of the Fort Hood massacre. Remember that one? Last December? Oh, gosh. You don't remember? You remember Matthew Shepard, of course, years ago in Colorado. There's been movies about Matthew Shepard, but the Fort Hood Massacre, none of the brilliant boys from Brooklyn and Hollywood would ever make a movie about that, because the villain is Major Hassan, who is a Muslim, and you can't have a movie about that. Now, if they could recast the Fort Hood Massacre so that a white Christian male, a member of a right-wing skinhead group, killed only minorities in the Army, then you could have a good movie. That's something that Steven Spielberg and such would make. Now, there's a movie Hollywood could get their gums behind. 1-800-449-8255. So what is the solution then? Since we don't know who the enemy is, we're not allowed to define the enemy, since there is no enemy. We are the enemy, and the government is our friend. Many of you don't even know that we're now living through the Big Brother book itself, where government is your friend, where war is peace. Remember Orwell? War is peace. Freedom of slavery. You remember all of that? Oh, God. Can't take that seriously because it's a good liberal president. And he's a minority, too. So since he's a minority, he's a sacred cow. And since he's a sacred cow president, he can do no harm, especially if you're in the media or the government or in the government media complex. Do you follow anything I'm saying, or is this too much for most of you? Is your brain starting to get fried because it's just too much for you? You like left, right, center? I talked about assault by Balgas. No one heard me. I want to play a little rock and roll, and I'll take some calls. I don't know. In the Still of the Night by the Five Statins we've played. We played So Fine by the Fiestas. Do we have Just a Dream by Jimmy Clanton, or we did that already? We did that? How about Just a Dream, Just a Dream?
Just we don't have dream,
that.
Just that a dream,
so just a dream. Where is she today?
All this our plans and all our dreams.
I imagine if she's still living, Boca Raton, after teeth gone. Have you ever seen how these actresses aged? Some of the actresses, I was like, my heart would be, I couldn't sleep when I was young. I'm thinking one of Carol Lindley. I don't even want to see her today. I never want to see a picture of her. Some of the actresses I was so in love with as a movie star, as you know, as a kid, I don't even want to know. Have you seen what happened to Brigitte Bardot? A nightmare. The sex kitten, Brigitte Bardot. Have you seen what Time and Gravity has done to that poor woman? Okay, so she certain things she did right. 20 years ago, she was arrested for saying the Muslims are taking over France and our churches are becoming mosques. So she was fined and arrested by the French government for that. And then she's an animal rights activist, which I actually agree with, that level of the type of animal rights that she does. I mean, she has her sympathies are in the right place. She has compassion for animals rather than for Frenchmen. I can understand that as well. But you don't want to look at her. I mean, this is a woman who's made for radio. This is a woman who should have a radio show. I don't know if she's got the voice for it. She has the certainly has the face for radio. There's no question about it. But you look back, you know, where are they today? That's why I don't even want to play this music. It's too heartbreaking. I downloaded her. The Drudge Report came down twice. Why does he always mention what Limbaugh says, these lame jokes? Keep your hands off my teabag. That's so square. Michael Savage has something like Assault by Balgast. Drudge doesn't publish it. They're all part of the same left. They're all part of the same clique, you know, the whole thing. I know what the whole game. I don't care anymore. Who needs anybody? All I need is my own intelligence to get where I want to go. You know what? I don't need anybody. No one's my friend. My father was right. My father was 100% right. There are no friends in the world. None whatsoever. Everyone's out to take anything they can get from you. They'll eat your meal. They'll take your food. Take your old lady. Anything anyone can get out of you, they'll take. So what's the solution? What do I know? Just be tough. Don't let him take anything from you, and that's all. Now that brings us around to family. Could even be worse within a family. If you see what goes on in families, my God. Look what goes on, one to the other, over a dollar. Look what the world is. You could say, all right, so you could say money is the root of all evil. Then where does that leave you? What do you want to trade in? Beads? Seashells? What's Gloria Allred? Probably one of the ugliest women I've ever seen in my life. My idea of hell would be an entire planet with Gloria Allred clones. Lawyers to begin with, I have trouble with. Body scans now. How did the world become what it is today? More than 300 die in stampeded Cambodian festival. Oh, God. How in the world? 300 die in stampeded Cambodian festival. Aren't they supposed to be smarter than us, more peaceful? Isn't it true that people in the third world are less violent than Americans? We're the worst people on the planet. It's like peaceful Buddhists, and they meditate. Isn't that like that couldn't happen over there? It's only over here madness reigns only over here, not over there. They're superior to us. They're gentle, kind people. Isn't that near where Obama went to school in Indonesia, kind of next to Cambodia? No, I know it isn't. Come on, I'm just pulling your leg. Stuff yourself with the truth. Close the borders, defund and repeal Obamacare, institute a flat tax, privatize Wall Street, and the regulation of Wall Street, end affirmative action, liquidate TARP, impose tariffs on China, strike down the Anchor Babies Law, use profiling to prevent terror attacks, run the country like a business, not an empire, says Michael Savage, and trickle up poverty. Now, it doesn't matter that I wasn't on Leno or Letterman. The book's doing very well. It doesn't matter that nobody in the mainstream media wants to acknowledge that the book is a big hit. So I've traveled. I'm with my dog now, Teddy. Pain in the neck, actually. I was told by the family, don't bring him. It'd be trouble. 24 hours a day with the chain. In the middle of the night. It's freezing down here in L.A., like 49. Got to get up at 5 in the morning. It's bad enough I have to go to the bathroom at 5 in the morning. Because he's so addicted to me. I get up, he gets up. I go to the bathroom, so he waits, so he has to go to the bathroom. But, of course, the poor dog can't go to a toilet. So I have to let him out. 49 degrees, I have to go out of a door. Then you have to worry about coyotes. Then you have to worry about animals. You don't know that there's wild coyotes in Los Angeles. I'm in a canyon, the back of a canyon. Studio, Area 51 studio. Oh, God. Saudi king heads the U.S. for medical tests. How come the Saudi king is coming to the U.S. for medical tests? How come he's not going to Cuba where they have Obamacare? How come he's not going to Venezuela for Obamacare? Same thing in Venezuela, same kind of Obamacare. Why is he coming here for Dr. Rosenblatt? Why would King Saudi Arabia come here for tests? Because I got the best doctors in the world still. They haven't all been crushed by Obamacare. Abdullah suffered a slip disc. How does an old king get a slip disc? Because, you know, I don't want to go into it because illness is illness. It could happen to anybody. They have some wild times, these guys. Wow, these guys know how to live. These guys in Saudi Arabia, these kings with all this money and the princes, man, they make the wild guys of Hollywood look like pikers. Are you kidding? I mean, they got white robes, they look nice, but man, they know how to party. These guys know how to get it on, man. Take a look at them. They're always sad, though. They have dour faces. They never smile. You ever see these princes? Always like, they look like Russians on steroids, Saudi Arabians. Never a smile. A Russian, once in a while, you give him a vodka, he can break into a smile. The meanest of them, you get a smile out of him. Never an Arabian. Ugh. Never. Maybe they smile to each other. I don't really know what goes on behind the whole thing, but the faces on them, mean, unhappy. Why are they so miserable with all of that marble and all the girls from Sweden? In other words, if sex, unlimited sex and all of that was so good, what are they so miserable looking for? They don't look like they're in particularly good shape either, by the way. Actually, you look at the king, it's a sad picture. I don't mean to mock the man. I mean, he is a king, and he's coming in for medical tests. But if you look at the whole picture, his legs are splayed in the wheelchair. He looks like I'm not going to say it. I'm sorry. Looks like half the women in Boca Raton in Century Village being wheeled out from the third floor to the fifth floor. Saudi Arabia's 86-year-old King Abdullah handed over duties to his crown prince and left to the U.S. for treatment over a blood clot and slip disc. I wish him well. I wish him the best. God only knows what will happen if Saudi Arabia fell into the hands of the radicals. Actually, the princes are our best friend, as bad as they are with regard to us, spitting on us and hating us and condemning us. Enough of them have gone to the University of California at Berkeley and experienced the wonders of the blonde to not be as bad as the terrorists who have not yet come here and gone to strip shows at the University of California at Berkeley, which they now have as part of the curriculum in certain departments. Royal decree mandating Crown Prince Sultan, his half-brother and heir, to administer the nation's affairs. I wish him well. The 85-year-old, by the way, the guy he appointed is a youngster. He's 85. He's 86, the king. So he turns it over to his half-brother, who's 85, a youngster, who has his own health problems. He underwent surgery in New York in February of 2009. Why New York? Why would these top guys from Saudi Arabia come to New York hospitals and have surgery from a Jewish doctor? No, they're going to go to Cuba and have a Spanish doctor operate on them. They want Obamacare. They want Cuban. They want, Castro Care. Of course they come here. They hate decadent West, but they come here when they get sick. They hate the decadent West, but when they want sex, they fly in blondes from New York. Oh, what a world I live in. Is he going to be at the Lincoln Room at the White House, I wonder? Why do these guys come in and they burn down a whole floor when they cook a lamb on the floor? That's, again, hidden up. Because they pay, they throw the money. You don't know half the stories that go on. I got people in the hotel business. I know what goes on. They fly in with two 747s, one for them and one for the concubines, and then one for the luggage and the goats. They have been known to cook goats on the floor of a hotel. They roast a goat right on the floor because they wouldn't trust any of the tray food down in a cart that you eat. I mean, you eat trafe on a cart that they wouldn't touch, even if it says that it's lamb. They wouldn't touch the lamb you eat. You don't know where it came from. They don't trust the lamb unless the thing was living and bang, right? They have to see it walking around and inspect it. They have to give it a body scan, and they have their assistant test the whole thing to see if it's healthy. Then they slaughter it on the floor in the hotel and then roast it. Then when they leave the hotel room, they throw down like $200,000 in cash and walk out. They know how to live, these guys. As I say, nothing compared. You got the Hollywood guys. They think they're living high. They drive around in a Porsche or a BMW. They have one girlfriend and they're stoned. They have no idea what partying is till they meet a Saudi Arabian. I'll be right back.
Savage. Eddie, my love, I love you so. How I
So the Saudi king, God bless his soul, is coming to the U.S. for medical tests. That's because they don't have sufficient medical tests in Saudi Arabia. But it begs the question, why is he not going to Cuba or somewhere in South America or even Spain? The answer is because the doctors there suck and the medical systems down there are worthless, which is why when Castro was sick, he flew in a doctor, I think, from Miami named Goldberg. So the official press release says the Saudi king is in... I want to assure everyone that the king is in stable condition, says the health minister. He enjoys good health, and God willing will return in good health to lead this great nation. And we can assure you that no one of the Hebrew persuasion will be touching his sacred body. It will be only high Christians. He will not be going to Mount Sinai Hospital, no matter what they say. He'll be going to the Episcopalian Hospital. It's always ranked, but they like the Jewish doctors. They're smart. They know Jewish doctors are still good. They're allowed to touch them, I think, if it's doctoring. It's like medical. If it's medical, they're allowed to touch them. You think you'll be screened by Homeland Security? I mean, 19 of the terrorists on 9/11 was Saudi Arabian. They shouldn't have to screen him or his entourage, right? He's in his own Air Force. So that's a moot point. There's no need to screen them coming or going. I mean, that's an absurd question. Only you should be screened, particularly if you're a returning war hero. Play Hyman Roth. Go ahead.
Since you have to take it easy, and he's going to give you a prescription, he'll be back tomorrow.
I want my own doctor. Fly him in from Miami. Don't trust a doctor. Can't speak English.
I love that. Chicago, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello there. You know, I first want to tell you, I learned about you through your Playboy interview.
I know what your reading material looks like in the house.
But I had a question.
Yes.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, the full body scans, are they bad for your health? Is that x-rays? Or
you know, truthfully, I hear different stories. The government, of course, says that the x-ray dose is the equivalent of flying for 6 minutes, right? Then there are people who say, no, that's not true. It's a higher dose, and they are like getting a chest x-ray, and the dose is high. So I don't really have the answer to that. I don't think that there's a definitive answer.
Hello?
What I'd like to know is who's pressing the button, and do the machines vary?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like when you get a chest x-ray, I mean, let's be realistic for a minute. I don't want to get too distracted with reality here, but when you get a chest x-ray, let's say a dental x-ray, they cover your thyroid, correct?
Yes.
I always make them cover, if it's a choice, I make them cover my genitals. I don't know about you. I always say to them, there's the lead, because they have like a thing that goes down and one that goes up. One covers the neck area, one covers the groin area. Because, you know, they're very sensitive to the radiation. And I don't want my family jewels contaminated with x-rays. So you read the Playboy interview and you tuned into the show on WIND.
I really did like it. I thought it was a tremendous interview.
I think it's a great interview. I didn't like the guy at all. He was a mean SOB from Playboy. Are you disappointed with the radio show or are you enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it, but I just after the Playboy interview, I started listening to it, and I really do enjoy your show.
That's awesome. It's been a year already. You didn't buy my book yet either? All right, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Would you like that for Thanksgiving?
Sure, I'd appreciate it.
All right, you got it. Stuff yourself with the truth, not with stuffing. Trickle Up Poverty. Look how we're almost flat out of time on the Savage Nation. Well, there's another big hour here across America on the Savage Nation. We've had a wonderful time thus far. I opened by talking about assault by bowel gas. And we don't know whether a gassin will stop the TSA from invasive body searches. But I don't recommend it. I do not recommend that you eat onions or garlic prior to going through the machine.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
big news today, of course, continues to be the story of the pat-downs at the airports. They're strip-searching little boys, rendering them into sex objects for the perverts. We know this is going way beyond, just way beyond security. This is about humiliation. This is about softening America up for government intrusion. We know this. We can see this from a mile away. We know just how this government works. Many different stories to talk about with regard to this today. However, it doesn't end there. The fact of the matter is, it only begins there. We're talking about the TSA scans and searches. The fact of the matter is, oh yes, they're intrusive, but I see them as an attempt to soften up the American people, to get them to be used to having their civil and constitutional rights violated by people of authority. So then it'll be easier to do this when things start to come apart, as they will, if we continue to go along the path that the left-wing fanatics under Obama are sending us down. I pointed all of this out in my blockbuster book, Trickle Up Poverty. The TSA searches because they attempt to thwart terrorism before it occurs, as you well know. This is very interesting. This goes against the way liberals generally think, which is that bringing terrorists to justice is a law enforcement issue and not one which requires intelligence gathering or interdiction prior to suspected terrorist attacks. It violates all of their protocols. So why then would liberals suddenly reverse course and start trying to prevent terrorist attacks? Well, I, Michael Savage, believe they're doing this because it's a chance to treat us, we the American people, as suspected terrorists when we want to board a domestic flight, in order to criminalize us, to get us to see ourselves as deserving of being treated as criminals. If Janet Napolitano and her cohorts would only exercise the kind of screening of people actually suspected of terrorism before they committed terrorist acts, this would be a much safer nation. Instead, the radical left wing objects to any attempts to even listen in on cell phone calls initiated by suspected terrorists. They see that this is a Patriot Act, and they hate the Patriot Act. They don't want to even capture them. They don't want to subject them to aggressive questioning. But the left says nothing when they strip search little boys and old women, because this is part of a much more nefarious agenda of radical Harvard student Barack Hussein Obama. This screening of American airline passengers is part of that bigger picture. It's all pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty. It is a strategy to get Americans used to being strip searched or searched without probable cause. It's an attempt to get Americans to see themselves as criminals, as people who deserve to be searched in this aggressive, overbearing manner. And it will not stop at airports. It's another attempt to drive a nail in the coffin of American freedom as the radical leftist Obama administration continues its march to take over this nation. And the more we Americans acquiesce to this type of illegal and unconstitutional search, the closer we are to giving up our rights to this overreaching central government of this former Harvard student, Barack Obama. Read all about it in Trickle Up Poverty, where his background as a Marxist is disclosed. How many different ways do I have to say the same thing? Okay, I think I made it very clear. Now, that certainly is the main story today. There's no question about that. Now let's get to some of the audio on the Savage Nation. I first want to play you the Kowtower in Chief Barack Obama speaking to Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah.
Your Majesty, on behalf of the American people, welcome. We appreciate your friendship, and we appreciate your good counsel, and look forward to continuing to work together to strengthen the strong bonds between our two countries.
I note he's very careful to address the king properly and goes out of his way to talk about how we all work together, which is great.
We also continued the conversation that took place this weekend about how the Saudi government and the United States government will continue to work together to expand the people-to-people contacts, the educational programs, the commercial ties, the business people who are working together in both countries so that not only do our governments remain strong partners, but our people are continually enriching both countries.
And Obama, I have a dog, and yes, I talk about Teddy. But please stop bringing up your dog on international trips, as you did with the Portuguese Prime Minister. you never mention him here in America.
I understand that there's been a fair amount of interest here about how my family has been enriched by Portugal as well, specifically Bo, our dog. He is the most popular member of the White House.
Let's now forget about the former spender-in-chief, George Bush, who's been making the rounds hawking his new book. He was on a comedian show saying that one of his mistakes was not toning down his language. Is he serious?
I'm comfortable with the decisions I made, and I took a lot of time to make the decisions. There are some things I'd like to do over. I mean, I was,
what would you do over?
Well, I wouldn't be standing in front of a mission accomplished sign on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Probably would have been a little less blunt in some of my language.
Right. Okay.
But dead or alive, perhaps.
Yeah. Dead or alive. Okay. Yeah. All right. Look.
At least being on a so-called comedy show let Bush regale the audience with old drinking stories.
I had too much to drink, and I was sitting next to a beautiful woman. Who was a lot older than I was, and my mother and dad were there, my brothers and sister and my wife, and I said to her, "What is sex like after 50?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a lot of unhappy people at the table.
Oh, yeah.
Left-wing California Senator Barbara Boxer compared the United States to nations such as North Korea because of our "don't ask, don't tell" policy. She said we should be more like Australia and England. You see, this is while North Korea is building nuclear launch facilities, she's forcing the military to worry about gays in the military.
We now stand with this rule with countries like Iran, North Korea, and Pakistan in banning gays and lesbians from military service. Now, our brave young men and women fight alongside allies like Australia, the United Kingdom, and others who allow gays and lesbians to serve openly. Let's not stand with Pakistan and with North Korea and Iran.
At least she thought America being like North Korea was a bad thing. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now have to look at a story that came out today about Obama on WorldNet Daily. They found an article from 1990 that the Associated Press released about Obama entitled "Harvard Student Tackles Racism at Core." You're not going to believe this. Tell me if this sounds like Obama. His boyhood friends in Indonesia were street peddlers. And his grandmother still lives in a mud-walled house in Kenya. Kenya? But Barack Obama is another world away, presiding over the Harvard Law Review as the first black president in the prestigious journal's 103-year history. The charismatic 28-year-old, ensconced in the halls where tradition reigns, is taking aim at another custom. Obama's sights, we read, are set on the south side of Chicago, not on a U.S. Supreme Court clerkship, or a fast-track career with a cushy firm? Remember, this is from 1990. He said, "I'm not interested in the suburbs. The suburbs bore me." Oh, what was he interested in? He said, "I feel good when I'm engaged in what I think are the core issues of the society. And those core issues to me are what's happening to poor folks in the society." They go on. Remember, they're talking about Obama. His passion is rooted in his background. He was born in Hawaii, his father an Oxford and Harvard-educated anthropologist from Kansas. His mother a white anthropologist from Kansas, sorry. Obama moved to Southeast Asia at age 2. This is contested, by the way, by some. When his parents divorced and his mother married an Indonesian. Till the 5th grade, Obama attended Indonesian schools, where most of his friends were the sons of servants, street peddlers, and farmers. Concern for Obama's education led his mother to return him to Hawaii, where he attended public schools through high school. In 1983, he graduated from Columbia University with a degree in political science. At a recent meeting in a Harvard cafeteria, his affinity with the underdog was readily apparent. He said, "I lived in a country where I saw extreme poverty at a very early age," Obama said. "Oh, really? And he said, "Parts of my family in Kenya remained very poor. My grandmother still lives in a mud-walled house with no running water. That's who I am. That's where I come from. Not always literally, but at least emotionally." Well, as I point out in Trickle Up Poverty, he was hanging out with a rich guy who was buying him all sorts of rich things. I'll continue the article, and I'm not going to read every word. When he gets to Harvard, he says this. Now listen carefully. There's certainly racism here. There are certain burdens that are placed more emotionally at this point than concretely. Professors may treat black students differently, sometimes by being sort of more dismissive, sometimes by being more sort of careful, because they think you know. They think that somehow we can't cope in the classroom. Well, has he changed? He concluded back in 1990 in the interview with this. I'm interested in organizations, not movements, because movements dissipate and organizations don't. Huh. Obama said. America suffered when the movements of the 1960s dissipated, he said. Those movements succeeded in raising doubts about harmful traditions of sexism or racism, but failed to offer a viable alternative. And here's how Obama concluded the interview. Hopefully, more and more people will begin to feel their story is somehow part of this larger story of how we're going to reshape America in a way that is less mean-spirited and more generous, Obama said. I mean, I really hope to be part of a transformation of this country and the future of black people and of America generally. It depends on how good I do my job, he said. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a radical in the White House, a very dangerous radical in the White House. That's one man's opinion on Michael Savage.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. One can tell.
He talked about our joint interest and work together in combating violent extremism. And we talked about a range of strategic issues, including the Middle East peace process and the importance of moving forward in securing a Palestinian homeland that can live side by side with a secure and prosperous Israeli state.
All alone.
How can you overlook what Obama has done to this country so far? Is he really the Frankenstein that the right wing makes him out to be? Or is this just a paranoid racist projection of the far right? Well, let's look at the record itself. Let's look at what he's trying to do to this country and what he's done to this country. How can you overlook that Obama is not only assaulting our economy, he inherited a $1 trillion deficit, a courtesy of the socialist George Bush, and he immediately turned it into a $3 trillion deficit, rewarding not the American people who needed the money and jobs so badly, but rewarding the cronies who put him in power. Make no mistake about that. Now he is trying to destroy our military. He is trying to deracinate NASA, the greatest space agency the world had ever seen. He is trying to undermine our nuclear capacity. I can go down the list, and I will go down the list. Because, you see, I've saved virtually every one of his speeches, every one of his policies I've analyzed. I didn't just let him come and go like news stories. It's a passion for me to try to get this across to you. So it's not just about the economy, the election. It is also about our national identity and our security. You just heard a speech from Obama saying that the Mexicans were here before the Americans, before Anglos. Now, how does that serve America's interests? How does it serve America's interest for him to divide us and give a speech that you would hear from La Raza or groups like MALDEF, who are ultra-nationalist brown supremacists? Now, it's also about our national identity and our security. It's about our self-respect. Incidentally, President Obama has diminished our self-respect as a nation, in case you don't know it. And I don't think that that's something you can pose as a question from a pollster. I don't think you can ask people, has President Obama diminished our image in the world and have it compute statistically? But I will tell you on an instinctual level, I believe President Obama has diminished our image in the world. I dream of a leader. I dream of a leader that one day I'll wake up to a leader that I'm proud of, who will actually get up and stand up and represent this nation in a manly way and project manliness on the world stage. I one day hope we'll have a leader who does not try to browbeat the American people while kowtowing to dictators.
Poor little fool. Oh, yeah.
I was a fool.
Your Majesty, on behalf of the American people, welcome. We appreciate your friendship, and we appreciate your good counsel, and look forward to continuing to work together to strengthen the strong bonds between our two countries.
But her heart was full of lies, poor little fool. Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see the reverse. Well, he browbeats Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, and he stands up to them, and he doesn't try to browbeat the people in this country who are the real Americans. I want a manly leader along the lines of Putin, without the totalitarian instincts of Putin. I would like to see a manly leader of the United States of America to bring us back from the abyss of insignificance that we have inherited over the last three or four presidencies, manifested, finally, in the Franken presidency of Barack Hussein Obama. And this is all one man's opinion. It is only one man's opinion.
Someone else would play love's foolish game with me, poor little fool. Oh, yeah.
1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. We're open to crop circles. We're open to prayer circles. We're open to seltzer drinkers. We're open to oil and vinegar shakers.
I was a fool.
Savage.
There's been much talk since the elections about how the Republicans will act now that they have regained the majority in the House, and if they will stay true to their values, well, the values they ran on. Joining us now with his opinion is Jack Hunter.
It's good to be with you, Michael. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about this freshman class we're seeing coming up on Capitol Hill now with the Tea Party. We see all these candidates who won on the message on the Republican side of fiscal responsibility, getting back to the Constitution. We're going to finally do something to rein in spending and debt in this country. And what can we do about it? When you see these freshman congressmen, whether it's Rand Paul or guys like Mike Lee or any of these candidates go on TV, they're always asked, the Republican Party across the board, where are you going to cut spending? Some are specific, some are not. When you get specific with these liberals, they get really upset and call you crazy and extreme, and you're back at square one. But some have been specific about where they would like to cut. And the best Tea Party candidates have said, quite frankly, across the board, we need to cut everything, domestic spending, everything we're doing, foreign spending. But John McCain got a little upset about the fact that some Republicans are saying we should look at the defense budget.
What did McCain say?
Senator John McCain, as we know, is a ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, said that he was concerned, this was in front of a D.C. think tank, about, quote, the protectionism and isolationism within the Republican Party. He referenced Rand Paul as being one of those Tea Party senators who has said that we need to look at all spending across the board, the military budget being 40% of our overall budget. Certainly that's a big part of it. And it's not about cutting the military. It's about cutting waste out of the military. Just like there is waste in domestic spending. Well, Senator John McCain equates this with being isolationist or protectionist, which is completely absurd, and I dare say John McCain's view on what should or should not be cut out of the military budget reflects his views of domestic policy that he's promoted over the years. We're talking about a big government Republican here in Senator John McCain.
Well, sure, okay.
Now, of course, McCain focused on Rand Paul, but there are a number of Republicans who have been saying this, most notably Mitch Daniels, who's the governor of Indiana, had said recently, if we're going to cut spending and you're looking at 40% of the budget being military spending, we need to look at maybe cutting some of that out. And he got a lot of flack from it from some in the Republican Party, Mitch Daniels being a potential 2012 presidential candidate. Another Republican is Senator Tom Coburn. Tom Coburn is obviously a very conservative member of the Senate, has done a lot of great things up there, but he said recently, quote, peace through strength can be accomplished through a waste of money. He's saying we're buying stuff we don't need.
True.
Coburn has proposed a freezing of Pentagon spending, which has nearly doubled since 2002. He said he'd conduct an audit. He wants at least $50 billion in cuts. And a number of Republicans have signed on to that, Rand Paul being one. Now, we have to look at spending across the board. You have to cut everything. That's all guys like Tom Coburn or Mitch Daniels and Rand Paul and a lot of these Tea Partiers are saying, that we have to look at every part of the budget. But it is suspect that a guy like McCain, and he's not alone in the Republican Party, have a problem with looking at that particular part of the budget. I think reflects a deeper antipathy towards limited government constitutional principles, which we see reflected in the policies of such Republicans like John McCain.
Right.
We've seen this time and again from all the liberal pundits, especially after the Tea Party candidates won. They say specifically, what are you going to cut? When a guy like Rand Paul does go on ABC's This Week with Christine Amanpour, and she tries to say, well, all your Tea Party candidates are vague. Where are you going to cut? And he says, across the board. She says, that's too vague. He reiterates that we mean that quite literally. We have to look at every aspect of what we do, thousands and thousands of pages of policy and legislation, and where can we cut ways. The idea that the American military, everything that we do, oh, I don't know, in Afghanistan, a lot of Republicans are wondering whether it's worth the cost of what we're doing there. Everybody from Michael Steele to Ed Coulter to George Will to you, Michael, after Obama announced his troop escalation, whether that's worth it. Or just basic waste. As it, you know, we hear the stories about a $50 million toilet on some battleship somewhere, things like that, just looking at it.
It's insane.
The idea that John McCain or any other Republican would say that that's no-go, that you can't look there, that that's part of the budget that is sacrosanct, that you can't even touch it, is indicative of their overall big government politics. These are big government Republicans that have never wanted to cut spending. They're always growing government, and this is just one more example. We do need to look at the entire budget. Rand Paul is right, Tom Coburn is right, and any Tea Partier who sees things in that perspective.
Well, they should have learned from the election. The public is tired of this double talk.
Well, you're exactly right, Michael. It was that Republican brand we saw under George W. Bush, which some call the neoconservatives or the neocons. John McCain was seen as representing in that brand in 2008 when he ran for president. It was something that voters rejected. It is a big government form of, I don't even call it conservatism, but republicanism. It is the reason during the last Republican administration so many on the so-called right or so many so-called self-described conservatives were comfortable with things like No Child Left Behind or comfortable with extension of Medicare entitlements, Medicare Plan D, and all these other things that just tied into this whole sort of big government narrative. If you will remember, at the beginning of the Bush administration, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard wrote a piece called Big Government Conservatism and made the case that conservatives should use an active, large, and energetic state towards conservative ends.
That's crazy.
Well, the neoconservatives, guys like John McCain, are like that about foreign policy as well. The traditionally conservative view on foreign policy is that we do have peace through strength, as Ronald Reagan once said, that we only go to war when it's necessary, reluctantly and constitutionally. And when we do it right. We get in, we get out, mission accomplished. Don't hold the soldiers back. Don't hold the generals back. That sort of thing. But the idea that what we're doing in Afghanistan right now, where so many people from General Stanley McChrystal, Petraeus has his doubts about what's up or down, what's good or right, what's bad, what's going on in Afghanistan, what's the true situation? The Republicans are questioning this. Are we spending too much money? It's 40% of our budget. Is that too much money? That is not controversial, especially to anybody who's a conservative or a Tea Partier. This is just a normal discussion that we need to have about what's important with spending in this country. And if John McCain's not ready to have that conversation or Republicans like him, they're useless to conservatives. I think many of us already know that.
How do we keep them on track?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now, you know, a lot of these freshman congressmen are up there on Capitol Hill, as some have said, you know, sort of checking out their school locker and finding out where their homeroom is, sort of getting their feet wet. But running on that Tea Party message that we have to be serious about cutting spending across the board, which is something most Americans, even from across the ideological spectrum, are on board with. To make sure these Tea Party candidates' feet, we hold them to the fire, something we can do in 2010 and 2012 at the elections, but also this Republican establishment that is already trying to rein them in. I think it was it Trent Lott who said not a few months ago that when we get these Tea Party candidates up there, we need to co-opt them. No, the Tea Party needs to co-opt the Republican Party. We need to look at spending across the board. We need to reduce the national debt. And if guys like John McCain are going to get in the way because the statism he's in love with as it relates to foreign policy spending and all the things that he thinks are worth it and we should never question, those guys need to get out of the way because they've been useless to this point and will continue to be useless in the future. I'm sorry.
Oh, I agree.
You know what's so amusing about this, Michael? It's not even yet a debate over whether or not we should be in Afghanistan or what we should be spending money on different possible interventions here or there, things we might be doing around the world. This is just a basic nuts and bolts. Let's take a look at the military budget. It's 40% of our budget. Where can we save money? And that a guy like John McCain, and we've heard this echoed by his buddy up there, Senator Lindsey Graham, and similar Republicans, are saying from the get-go, no, you can't even approach looking at government waste as it relates to the military or foreign policy is completely absurd and, once again, indicative of where those guys are coming from. They have no problem with big government. Yes, they use the rhetoric during election time and say they're for the Constitution and say they listen to the founders without ever heeding their vision or their words, but they've been liars up to this point and will continue to be liars, and that we can't even look at this massive part of the budget that Tom Coburn and Rand Paul, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels have just suggested we cast an eye upon, a critical eye when it comes to spending. That's completely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at all of this, and spending must be cut if the Tea Party is serious, and I think they are.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
I appreciate you having me on today, Michael. For this and more, I encourage your listeners to visit southernavenger.com. Y'all take care.
Only time will tell us if the Tea Party has changed the way the GOP will represent us from here on out. Stay informed, listen to this show, read Trickle Up Poverty to see the tricks they're going to use to put you in poverty and to keep them on track. I'll be right back.
Savage.
After my research, after a few drinks at the I think at the end of Broadway, San Francisco has a beautiful waterfront. The fog finally came in. It was the end of a work day. I went down to a place called the Waterfront Restaurant. I had a couple of drinks with my friend, the owner, Al. And you're not going to believe what happened to me. I step off the curb onto a very busy thoroughfare called the Embarcadero. The traffic is all coming from the left, from the direction of the ferry terminal. It's a one-way street where it meets my sidewalk, you know, where I'm stepping off. So naturally, I look to the left. It's a red light. I step into the street. Just as my foot hits the street, a bicyclist comes shooting at me from the right side at about 30 miles an hour and almost killed me. He missed my face. I could feel the air on his bike. So I cursed him out. He gets off his bicycle. I said, "You stupid son of a you-know-what." I said, "Are you trying to kill somebody? You're going the wrong way, you idiot." He gets off the bike. He's 30 years younger than me and much bigger than me, and he says, "No, I only want to kill someone like you." That's what he said to me. Now, this is about a half a mile from where a friend of mine's wife was almost killed by a bicyclist a few years ago. The police are not doing their job in San Francisco. The police are letting these homicidal maniacs on bicycles kill people in crosswalks. They're letting them ride in the wrong direction, and it's time to stop. Where the hell is the San Francisco Police Department hiding in the police station? But I don't blame them. I blame the mayor who has told the police not to touch the sacred cow on bicycles. But wait, there's more to this story. I step off the curb. I look to the left. No traffic. The bicyclist almost hits me. We get into a screaming match. He gets off his bicycle to come forward to me. I don't back off a second. And guess what happened next? You're never going to believe what happened next, because I can't believe it. It was the hand of God, I'm sure of it. A black man who was the spitting image of Jimi Hendrix, but 30 years older, with gray hair and a big cross on his chest, comes out of nowhere, and he comes up to both of us and he says, "Act like gentlemen, calm down, act like gentlemen." And I say, "But he almost killed me." And the guy with the Nazi eyes, who had hate and murder in his eyes, the bicyclist, looks at the black guy, realizes there's a witness, looks at me, and he gets on his bicycle and he drives away. I learned something from that interchange. I learned two things.
If you've listened to my show for any length of time, you know that I have a difficult relationship with God. Sometimes I think he exists, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I think that it's all a hoax, sometimes I know it isn't. In other words, I'm like the average man. Mother Teresa herself said, we found out in her memoirs, that she didn't know if God existed. But she continued to act as though he did. And so, you know, I publicly doubted God's existence on this show as near as last week. Well, let me tell you how I interpret this near collision and the intervention of the true Good Samaritan. I'll tell you exactly how I interpret it, and then I'll ask you how you interpret it. Remember what I just said to you. I step off a curb, there's no cars, and this bastard comes to me out of the right side, the wrong way, 30 miles an hour on a speeding bicycle and almost kills me. We get into a screaming match. He gets off his bike to confront me because he knows I'm older than him, and he knows that I'm less able to fight with him than he is. He wants to hurt somebody. He's a homicidal maniac. Out of nowhere, a Good Samaritan appears, a black man, looks like Jimi Hendrix, only he's gray. It's 30 years later. He's wearing a big cross. And in a quiet voice, but strong, he says, act like gentlemen, act like gentlemen. Not commanding, imploring nicely. And he dissipates the entire situation, and he walks away and disappears as though he had not been there. What this is to me, an ordinary man, is God said to me, you don't believe I exist? Let me show you something. I could take your life away without you even seeing it coming. With the loss of one breath, you're dead. If I want you dead, you're dead. And then, if I want you saved, you're saved. I'll put an angel on the planet for you. I'll put a black angel right on that planet when you need him. And that's what I saw. That's all there is to it. There's no other way to interpret this. Now, the agnostic or the atheist will say, well, you still don't prove God exists, but that's your problem, not mine. In other words, if God speaks to you directly in this manner, how can you say he doesn't exist? What do you want him to do, come in a white robe? Then you'd be Jimmy Carter. If you think he has to come and sit in your living room with you and have a cup of tea, then you're Jimmy Carter, okay? You may as well just be taking the strychnine drink with Jimmy and his relatives, you know, and doing the hokey-pokey up there and seeing God on the couch. A lot to talk about. Did I tell you about my dream? What time is it? Do I have time already? Was it up an idea
dream,
yet? Horrible, long
dream.
People in shorts. Boats. It was endless. Boats and shorts. And partying and drinking. Everywhere I turned, people on water skiing going by, waving and going, woohoo! And I'm sitting here saying, am I crazy? The world is burning in front of my eyes. We're in two wars. We have a recession. We have a lunatic child president. We have an out-of-touch administration. Woo-hoo! And the skiers go by. It's a tough thing being a talk show host, let me tell you. So anyway, it went on and on and on. But I'm a man who looks forward to sleep for a reason. A, because I need it. B, because sleep is the only reason I'm still living. I don't even think it's the vitamins. I'm pretty sure it's the vitamins, truthfully, and sleep. It's the least important. It's the least. The reason the doctors don't tell you about sleep and rest is they can't sell it to you. The reason the doctors don't tell you about taking a nap in the middle of the day is because, A, you can't do it because you're not a talk show host, and B, they can't package it and put it in a pill, and they can't test for it. Some quack can't put a machine on you and say, you're sleep deprived, here's a pill, go to sleep in the middle of the day. It's time proven, it's age old. The siesta is the reason I'm living this long. So anyway, I sleep a lot and I dream a lot. Ah, to sleep, perchance to dream. Did I tell you about my dream over the weekend? To sleep, perchance to dream. To perchance to dream, here's the dream I had. The dream was so prophetic that I, Michael Savage, know I was put on the radio 16 years ago. And why this book, the sine qua non of my entire life, Trickle Up Poverty, is a raging bestseller. Here's the dream. I dreamed I was in some sort of an adult university classroom. And a very chatty middle-aged woman was the teacher, and she was going on and on about how great Mao Zedong had been, how Mao had built steps in the mountains, and how he had carved tunnels through mountains, and how he marched an entire army across China, and what a great accomplishment it was, and what great fortitude Mao Zedong had, and what great vision he had. And one man stood up, a middle-aged, respectable man, and he started to clap and say, great, great, he was a great man, he was wonderful in the communist tradition of clapping as the teacher spoke. So in the dream, I screamed out in the classroom, sit down, you bastard. Mao was a Chinese Hitler. He killed 60 million of his own fellow Chinese, but the man kept clapping, and the teacher tried to admonish me, not him. And the middle-aged, nice teacher tried to control me, and she said, "No, you can't yell out in a class. That's not right. That's not what happened." And I yelled at her, "If you don't know what Mao Zedong actually did, you're not qualified to be a teacher." And that was the end of the dream. Now, what does that have to do with Barack Hussein Obama? I believe Barack Hussein Obama is a disciple of Mao Zedong. Now, why do I say that? I say it because he hired one Marxist slash Maoist after another, including the well-known Anita Dunn, who he had to fire when she glorified Mao Zedong. And you have no idea how dangerous this man actually is, and you have no idea how dangerous his disciples are. None. You have no idea. And you have no idea what lurks underneath the shadows of this man and his surrounded minions, none of whom had congressional approval. I mean, we have a country with checks and balances, and none of the czars have been checked nor balanced. And I'm going to tell you something. I woke up from that dream, and I realized I was put here to alert America and the world to the dangers of this papier-mâché messiah. Michael Savage was put here to give America his manifesto, Trickle Up Poverty, the true inside story of the Obama administration. All right. Play some music.
That's good.
Heavenly shades of night are falling.
I have on my desk a compass. It's a paperweight compass, a Weems and Plath paperweight compass that mariners love. I carry this with me wherever I go, you know, wherever studio I'm in, wherever I am on Earth. I need to know where north is. I need to get my bearings, northeast. I have to know where I am. Inside a building, I don't like being disoriented, so I have a compass. Would you believe it? Isn't that strange? Am I the only guy who carries a compass around inside a building? There's something about me that's got such a nautical, you know...
Savage.